Every entrepreneur has been there. Growing pains
obstacles make you
grow gains.
It's the challenges that cause us to level up.
I'm your host, Alicia Dominico.
Do you think it's important to have paid media just because it's going to automatically work?
So I've been doing this for quite a while, and I remember the days where if you build it, they would come naturally. So my heart is really like, I wish we were still in those days, but we are not.
When you know you need to grow your audience quickly beyond your existing or organic network, your company wants to get good value from the experience. And what I mean by that is a return on investment and more. You want to know that you spent money, but you at least eventually made a lot more from the endeavor. Advertising is always a bit of a gamble, but if you don't completely understand how paid traffic generators work, then spending money on it can feel even more risky. This episode is about demystifying paid traffic so you don't bet the farm and walk away empty-handed. This episode of the Company Growth Podcast is sponsored by Answer Connect. Answer Connect is a 24/7 live call answering service that ensures your customers get the answers they need from a real human voice. Did you know that 80% of people will end a call if they reach voicemail? Answering all those calls could be the difference between gaining a client or losing a customer. When you're busy, you don't have time to answer all those calls, but revenue could be slipping through your fingers. Think of this as amazing for people like plumbers who are out there on the road and they don't really have time to answer and schedule the next appointment. So that's where Answer Connect is an amazing use case. Partner with Answer Connect and you'll have access to 24/7 customer support specialists. So even in the event of an emergency, you have people ready to help your callers when they need you. Visit answerconnect.com/CA to find out more. Let's get on the same page with a definition. Paid traffic includes all the visitors to your website who were driven there through paid ads on Google, social media, websites, within apps, or anywhere else a customer may see ads on the web, like Amazon and the Wild West of AI assistants. We'll get into that later. Paid ads tend to drive traffic a whole lot faster than free organic tactics like SEO. The downside, of course, is that you have to pay for it. Understandably, that raises the stakes for marketers and can create a lot of worry since you're buying advertising space. You're worried about overspending. Maybe you're spending too much money on bids and terms that cost more to click than other ones. You're worried about wasting your time. We're going to spend all of this time putting a campaign together, and what's it really going to give us? And how are we going to reliably know? You're worried about not making back what you spent. Even if you get traffic, you're probably also worried that it's going to be quality traffic. And even if you get traffic and it's quality traffic, how are you going to know that they're there? Did you set up a conversion point to make sure that you'll know about those leads, to turn them into actual leads instead of just paying for traffic? That's a gap that we see happening a lot, and things that are verifiable concerns. And starting in paid media, you want to make sure that you have it set up correctly with conversion points that will work, that you can test, so you get visitors and get that traffic turned into actual leads. Because they're not the same thing. I think another gap is just not understanding what you're paying for, what it costs, what's involved, how much time it's going to take from your team, not understanding what you could even put into a call to action to create that conversion point that's going to create the lead, not understanding what you can track, how much infrastructure you're going to need, what software will be involved. How many different types of ads that you'll need are also another point of concern. What should we start with? What should we keep doing? How's the artwork? How are we going to know what it's performing and if the artwork is different to the message and which is the one that's letting us down versus the page that they actually land on and if that is the thing that needs to be optimized? So they like the ad, but then they didn't convert. All of these things need tracking around them and a process for testing them. At Tangible Words, we've been following the Mint CRO methodology of sprint testing, where you just test the message really inexpensively, and then you see which message is the most cheapest click-worthiest method. So is there an opportunity to get a term with phrasing that people find interesting that isn't going to be the most competitive term that I'm going to be overspending on the cost of that click for that message? Because I'm competing with everybody on that term that everybody wants to show up for. And then later on, you can test design as a second phase on top of that message. And of course, if you have the tracking on your conversion point, you can also be doing tests on your conversion point to make sure that those are, you know, what is it that's breaking down? You're never going to know for sure on the first test, but by incrementally changing one thing at a time, you can start to get a picture. I think it's also a little bit terrifying to know, how much is all of this going to cost me? Which people am I going to need involved? What's it going to look like? So having somebody that you can consult with for free for a long part of the time and get all of those questions answered is something that I really value. People are generally willing to give some of their time to help somebody. When you are at that point of needing to get education about what is the next step for you, I think everybody's going to be willing to offer their time for free to properly scope a project. And it doesn't mean that necessarily a project is on the table, because I think also where we can win in B2B is to recognize that most things now are a considered purchasing process. If it's over $100, there is going to be a considered path to deciding if you need that or not. And I think you need to have time with people for free, so it's not pressured, so that you can really understand what it is that you need to purchase, or maybe you can handle it in-house. So being able to meet with people for free, I think, is really empowering for both the buyer and the seller, especially in the B2B services space. And trust people. If they're offering that service for free, take them up on it, and they'll let you know when it has to become a paid service. And that shouldn't be awkward, because everybody's come to the table saying, hey, we both need to get educated here. You about me and how I'm going to be buying, and me about you and how you're going to be selling. My good friend Lika Wouters is the person I go to with questions about paid traffic whenever the industry is changing.
I'm Lika. I work for a company called Mind and Metrics. We have been doing this for quite some time. I've been doing this for a couple of decades now, and we've evolved over the years. And right now, we're transitioning a little bit more to digital transformations, AI consulting, and generally helping companies scale better.
And Lika's been on this show many times. You may recognize her voice when we talked about how to split the difference. And I'm pretty sure, did we have you in season one? We didn't have you in season one. Was Split the Difference your first time on the show?
Yeah, that was my first time, yeah.
And we talked dirty stuff then about the guts of how to negotiate, how to sell. It was a really helpful conversation to a lot of people. We've gotten a lot of positive reviews on that show about Chris Voss's book. And I really want to talk to you and tap your knowledge about increasing your revenue with paid traffic today and creating a paid media strategy. And I think, as you said at the start of the show, it has changed. How we search has changed. AI is making a difference. When we talk about increasing your revenue with paid traffic, tell me how AI is changing the game.
So just to take a quick step back, you know, this used to all be lumped under SEM, search engine marketing. And then, you know, as its children, you had search engine optimization and paid media. And search engine optimization was your organic way to get leads toward, you know, to acquire leads or to get in front of people. And then paid media was the paid version. And paid has always been like a little bit quicker, right? If you were investing in SEO, it was like you're building equity, whereas paid media was very much turn on the faucet, get leads kind of thing. And that worked. That balance was always something that we recommended to agencies. Like, you had to do part SEO, part paid media. But with AI and ChatGPT, people are in all different kinds of spots learning about their problems and trying to solve them. So it's not uncommon for someone to jump into ChatGPT and find a solution to something that they're stuck with. Bing has incorporated that into their search engine as well. So the way that people are searching is becoming way more interactive, and that undoubtedly will change the game. I don't think we're there quite yet. Like, I still think you can set up your paid media strategy, but in the next 5 years, I expect there to be a lot of change in this area. AI is really throwing a wrench into everything. And so just search engine marketing, you know, that kind of has SEO and paid media under it. And yeah, and with AI and ChatGPT and even Bing having this chat search now, the way that people are searching is going to change because of AI. So like, the whole ecosystem is very fluid at the moment and adapting and evolving as well. And so when we go into Google Ads, we're mostly setting up PMax campaigns now, which is Google's AI form of displaying ads.
PMAX or Performance Max campaigns take your inputs like images, headlines, and links, and then use AI to automatically create and deliver ads to the whole Google universe that includes search, YouTube, Gmail, and Maps. Like with every tool, there are pros and cons.
I mean, I like it, but I think that's also just me because I like the techie stuff. But I think it has removed a lot of barriers to entry for anybody that wants to get involved in paid media, because it's so like, just plug in your, you know, your messages, right? Your value propositions, and just plug in your logo and plug in your lifestyle imagery and plug in the videos that you have on YouTube, and Google will calculate and use its own artificial intelligence to kind of figure out what combination of those things give you the most return on your ad spend.
And how did it used to be for people, just to clarify?
So you would set up a search campaign. You had your call to actions in there. You had to plug in your keywords. You had to, you know, your limited with the character amounts and it was very keyword based. So you would plug in keywords, then remove keywords that weren't working for you, add negative keywords, and that's just on search. And then with display, you would get your imagery, create your ads, and you would choose where it was going to be placed. And later on, it evolved to like giving some context and intent. And now all of these separate products are really kind of merged into PMAX, which is all driven by AI. You basically plug in your data and say, go run, and Google brings you conversions. There's a bit of a caveat there, because you plug in bad data, you're going to get bad data back, right? You're not going to get the results that you want to see. So there is still some finessing that needs to be done. Understanding your messaging is becoming more and more critical.
So if someone wants to increase the revenue with paid traffic, what would you advise them to do today?
So I would advise, one, I think you need to come to the table prepared. So with that, you need to know what are your unique selling points? What problems are you solving? Who are you talking to, your buyer personas? And what are the conversion points on your website that you want to track? You need to come with that. Then there's some basic math that you want to come with, which I feel like marketing has become more and more math driven, which I'm not really fond of, but that's really what it comes down to.
All these English majors and psychology majors doing marketing are now but where's the math in that?
We got to do the math. What is your conversion rate? Okay. And certain things people have been trained over the years. We know X amount of clicks, and the impressions, you get your click through rate. But I think because the buyer's journey is so vast and all over the place, and there's so many different channels that buyers go through before they convert, that you really need to know a little bit more about attribution modeling. What kind of paid media do you put out there for awareness? What kind of paid media do you put out there that is there to really drive conversions? Where are you fishing? Are you fishing top of the funnel, middle of the funnel, bottom of the funnel? And based on that, I think there's still at this point some truths. I think if you're top of the funnel, Meta is a great platform.
E-commerce, B2C works really, really well there. But you and I work in the B2B world most of the time, where it's business services. That's not your first place. Is Meta, maybe LinkedIn, but not a lot of necessarily ads that are really speaking into maybe solving those business problems, even though, marketers, we've been pushing it and saying, well, there's still people too, and they're still socializing on there. So, sign up to their
day job and try to actually reach them as a person about what they might be experiencing in business problems.
So I think meta is very much a stumble upon. I call it a stumble upon kind of thing, because I don't think, even for e-com, I don't think that people really wake up and say like, oh, I want to, you know, I need to buy some sunglasses today. Let me go to Facebook, right? Chances are, if they're like, oh, I want to buy some sunglasses, they'll be like, oh, I remember that cool brand that I've been following on Facebook. The other alternative is that it's recommended by a friend, which always has great amount of weight. Oh, so-and-so bought it. Oh yeah, let me buy it, you know?
And I think you'd also mention when you and I were talking offline about searching from Amazon, and that is still a really, you know, the prime network through the COVID years has made everybody, even the laggards like me, now think of that as the first place that you go to shop.
Right. And Amazon ads, so there's paid media there as well, which people haven't really tapped into as much, because it's like, you know, Google and Facebook and Instagram, but there are other places where you can like place ads, like TikTok, like Pinterest, like Amazon. So I think when you're starting out, it's kind of like, where do I go first? That's always a bit daunting. And I guess kind of going back to that paid media strategy, it's like, where do I spend my money? And the obvious answer to that is go where your clients are. And so that requires a certain knowledge of your clients. You need to know, where do they hang out? Where are they shopping? What is the consideration process for your buyer's journey?
I think if you're doing B2B services, how would we advise people as to how to figure out where they hang out? I mean, a lot of what we're doing in B2B service providers is educating. So that top of the funnel SEO'd content can still be enormously valuable, because it's an evolved purchase. It takes a long time. And you do tend to go, at least I tend to go, and I think you'd agree a lot of shoppers are like that. You go to Google or a search engine of your choice and you type in, I need to understand this problem. And then that takes you on a path of education for understanding who are the key players in the space, what are the ways to solve this problem, what does a solution even look like, is it multiple platforms or one? Is that how you would advise them to?
Yeah, correct. And on top of that, there's this new layer of AI where people are going to ChatGPT to start that educational process, you know, whereas before you would type that into Google, now you're typing some of these things into ChatGPT or Bing Chat.
And we don't know how ChatGPT is finding resources. So if you say, I need to solve this problem, you know, I have a CRM problem, even if you don't even know how to name it, I don't know how to keep track of my customers, let's take it back to that step. You type that into ChatGPT. We don't know if ChatGPT is how it's going to recommend. Is it going to recommend providers? Is it going to say you need a CRM and introduce them to the term? There's no knowledge yet.
Well, so anything for ChatGPT is learned prior to September 21, 2020. Don't quote me on it. So there's a cutoff date at which it stopped learning. So it's based on knowledge before that. However, if you look at Bing, Bing has not stopped learning. So it is evolving as people are searching. Today I went into Bing and I typed in, you know, what are CEOs concerned about for 2024? I can't do that in ChatGPT, because ChatGPT will stop and say like, hey, you know, my learning stopped in September of that year, and like my knowledge is based on up to that point. Whereas in Bing, it will look through the current web and it will piece together all kinds of different articles and give me an answer. So again, kind of going back to search engine marketing, the fact that I'm doing that now, it's changing. And I think it's only going to change more rapidly. One of the things that we're looking at too is like whether or not you should start posting ads on Bing. For the longest time, it wasn't really that strong platform. And Google still has a phenomenal market share compared to Bing. So it was obvious that if you had to spend your money, it was just better to spend it on Google. But that's changing as well. If people are tapping more into that AI-generated search.
Why did you take that search this morning, what are COOs caring about in 2024, to Bing and not to Google?
because it's conversational, I can say expand on that. Like I can type in the same way that I can prompt ChatGPT, I can prompt Bing. And I think that's part of like the beauty of ChatGPT is that it will summarize things for you. The same with Bing Chat, it will summarize some of your results. I don't have time to like click through every single website page to find the information. So that shift is huge, but that doesn't mean that you should forgo paid media right now. I don't want to like sit here and say like, oh, don't worry, you know, just use Bing. I think we're not there yet. But it is food for thought as to, you know, what is your immediate strategy and what is your strategy beyond the next year? You know, how are you looking to actually grow your business? And I think you and I both know that growing a business is a long-term effort. It's not something that happens overnight, although I wish it would.
Mistakes will be made. Things will happen, right?
Right.
And you'll grow. I mean, that's part of it, is the growing pains, and we want to talk about that. So let's talk about those growing pains right now. Things are going to change, but we still need it right now. The way that we've always explained it, you and I together, and we've shared an understanding that there is organic and there is paid media, as you've explained. And organic is really important for building your equity. You have to keep going. It's great for educating your customers. So people who are like, don't do blogs, don't do videos, don't do podcasts, I think they're missing an opportunity, because search marketing is still very, very relevant. We're planning this whole season's podcast with search opportunities because we think people are going to be looking for ways to learn things, and podcasts are going to be very, very useful for learning things still. So I think search engine optimization and everything you've been learning or from us or from other people and from SEMrush Academy is still really, really relevant. But the paid media piece traditionally has always been that more muscle, where if you want to do lead generation more quickly, you can't rely on your existing algorithms or delayed algorithms, as we've traditionally seen with how SEO works on Google. You don't want to wait for that sandbox or that 30 to 60 days. You want to get people tomorrow, today, and next week. You need paid media to really boost and go outside of your audience and to join in on grabbing those people who are searching for you right now, or who might be able to stumble upon you because your ad is placed in front of them. Do you agree with that still?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is increasing your revenue with paid traffic still one of the best ways to increase your revenue?
Yes, because...
assuming they've come prepared.
Right. First of all, just come prepared. But you have options where you can set like a target return on ad spend, right? So we currently have a client, they have very small profit margins. And this is where the math comes into play, because you got to know your profit margins. You got to know your business math, right? And so when we came to the table, we were like, okay, great. It's great that we're going to spend a ton of money, and it's great that you're investing in. But ultimately, paid media is about spending as little as you can and getting the most return on ad spend possible. And so knowing your profit margin is key as well. And then what you can do is you can set up your campaigns to target specific ROAS or return on ad spend. So, you know, we can say like, okay, if the return on ad spend is too little, then it doesn't really make sense for us to bid aggressively, you know, in this section or on this keyword or for this product, or however, you know, you choose to kind of set up your Google ads. And so, you know, if you can nail down your ROAS, then that's a beautiful thing, and you can scale quite rapidly. I think the other part that owners sometimes get bogged down in is this tit for tat. So it's like, oh, I spent, you know, $5 to acquire a customer brings in 10. And they're like, is it worth it? Or I spend $5 and, you know, the client, you know, only gives me back 5. So there it's like, you know, break even kind of. And then people are like, oh, I don't know if it's worth it. But there's another part of this, and that is your client lifetime value, because it is so much cheaper to retain a customer than it is to acquire a customer. So even if you spend 5 and they're giving you 5, Are they, you know, is that all that they're doing, or are they giving you 5 2 months later and another 5 2 months later? And all of a sudden the picture starts to shift a little bit as to what that initial $5 of paid media spent actually contributed to your bottom line. And so a lot of times when we're reporting on paid media, we like to get feedback from the owners, because it's not just like, okay, your $5 gave you this, but what else is happening in your business? How many repeat customers do you have? How many of those repeat customers started as paid media acquisitions? Tracking your customers is key, but also tracking what happens once they become a customer. I think that is super important.
Well, we talk about lifetime value. So lifetime value minus cost of acquisition is a really important metric. And, net customer value is kind of the outcome of that equation that you want to calculate. Tangible Words has been doing a lot of work on this in the last few months, looking at ways we can pull that information in people's HubSpot accounts to get them that math, which has, I think it's been a little bit of a gap. And you can look at return on ad spend as part of that CAC, that cost of acquisition, your ROAS, but it's not the full story. And I think there's a really interesting story too, that it's not just the paid media that it costs to acquire them, just like their lifetime value isn't just what they spent with you, but so much of our business comes from referrals. So being able to track that, if you brought in that net new lead and that lead then bought from you 5 closed-won deals, and then they referred 5 other customers to you, the net customer value is actually way higher than that simple calculation of return on ad spend for what they initially spent with you on that first time purchase.
100%. And I feel that a lot of owners, and I think this is a problem that we're seeing in many aspects of business, but is that they, in order to understand these complex business systems, they like to have siloed look at things. So siloed look at paid media, siloed look at, search engine optimization, silos between sales and silos between marketing. And I think we are past that. Like, the sooner you can break down your silos and the more you can connect the dots between everything, the better off you'll be, and the easier it'll be to scale your business.
Let's go back to what you were talking about that come prepared. So you're going to start a paid media strategy and you've got to come prepared. You've got to know what your content assets are that you want to drive traffic to. You have to have a conversion spot to actually gather that lead, which I think is something that's really important. And of course, you have to know all that business stuff that startup companies and even maturing companies are constantly reevaluating, which is that, what is my unique selling proposition now? Especially as the business world is constantly changing and has changed so much within the last year. But what is my unique selling proposition now against all these other competitors? And who is most likely to buy my product amongst all these other competitors? Who are the people who are likely to choose us? And then your conversion points. You were talking a little bit about intent type content. And I think it was Google who initially came out with, but Semrush has copied that sort of a commercial, transactional, informational type of structure of naming the types of content and intent around search terms, which has been super useful in Semrush research to be able to say, oh, that search term is kind of more bottom of the funnel. That search term is more top of the funnel. I don't think a lot of people had an ability to index that information or even talk about that meta language around intent around content. Have you seen that change? And is that still going to be important?
Yeah. And I think it ties in with attribution. Like, that's attributing, where your conversions come. And you can't always always give the credit to the first touch. Can't always give credit to the last touch. You really have to understand all the different models. We have so much more tools. And before, I think we were guessing a little bit. We kind of knew, Facebook, it's a little bit more top of the funnel, maybe a little bit more middle of the funnel. And theoretically, we could deduce some of the intent based on the content we were putting out there and whatnot. And I think that is becoming more and more critical to really moving people, from top of the funnel down to the bottom of the funnel. Because I think one of the biggest mistakes that I see being made is that when people are like, okay, we don't have a lot of clients, we're just starting out, let's do a lot of top of the funnel, and they'll continue to do top of the funnel. But there's no transition between top of the funnel to middle of the funnel to bottom of the funnel. We want to take that person that's interested in interacting with us at top of the funnel and move them towards a conversion, a macro conversion.
Yeah, I mean, progressions, right? We've at Tangible Words for the last couple of years been doing a lot of data architectures for our clients using HubSpot. And we've been looking at the four conversions that every single company has. And it's so important. I say it on every sales call, and I'm going to record it for everybody right here. But your first conversion is the fact that you have no contact and you get them to become a contact in your CRM. Where most companies then have that lead go to die is that they don't have the automations and the how we work that lead process figured out. So that second conversion of they're a contact in our CRM to they now have an open deal with us is where a lot of contacts go to rot in people's CRMs. So you have all this kind of fat of leads that are not quality leads. Nobody knows anything about them. We don't have any data points around them. We don't know how to work them, how to automate communications to them. And then you want to go from that open deal to that next conversion, which is ultimately a closed one conversion. That's your third conversion. And then your final conversion is that repurchase. And there are communication critical touch points with throughout all four of those conversions that a lot of companies just don't have any insight on or haven't taken the time to diagram. So we're doing a lot of work of being like from no contact to contact. And paid media really sits at those points, at all of those points where you can be having paid media to communicate with people who are existing customers in your CRM using HubSpot lists. And you can also have paid media just getting you to have a new contact and have them convert on the form. But the infrastructure to make them convert is often missing in people's companies, and along with that high intent content that's going to make them come back to you and let you know they're interested or wanting to progress in a relationship.
Yeah. I agree. And I think one of the reasons why, and we see this mistake a lot as well, is closing that feedback loop or that data gap. So HubSpot does a good job of showing you who comes in as paid media, not only who becomes a lead, but then also who actually ends up being a customer and a repeat buyer. I mean, that's that reporting is baked into HubSpot, which is fantastic. If you're not using HubSpot, if you're using another system, you have to mimic that by creating those feedback loops back into your system. So, you know, especially when it comes to Google and like your paid media strategy, in order for its algorithm to really work in your favor, you have to be able to tell Google, I want more of these types of people. And those, when I say these types of people, most likely they're people that are paying customers, right? If you do not close that gap, Google will just guess, and it can guess horribly wrong. Like, as much as I like to sit here and tout, AI is wonderful, AI is great, I'm using Bing, like, with AI baked in, woohoo! At the end of the day, it's only as smart as the data we put in it. So if we don't close that gap, you're not going to get what you want out of it. And there's a certain like course correcting that we have to do with AI all the time. If you've jumped on ChatGPT and have tried to prompt it and it comes back with something really wonky or weird, there's still a human element that needs to be there that has the smarts, that has the senses, and that's like, hey, wait a minute, this isn't correct or that's not working. And so when we're dealing with paid media and even AI, we want to make sure that we close the gap as solid as we can so that we can, it becomes an upward spiral. Google learns from the successes, not the failures that it's creating.
All right. So let's recap. Building a paid media strategy has got to have, you know, who's buying from you. You know a lot about them because your paid media isn't going to work unless you have the right data to insert about who you should be showing these ads to. And PMax is the same as what came before it. You really still need to understand who's buying from you and what to say that would make you stand out from your competitors. You need to come with an understanding of intent-based content that will take people from no contact to open deal to closed one to repurchase so that you can make sure that you are looking at your cost of acquisition across paid media for the whole lifetime value of that customer. You need to have some tracking in place so that you understand how to keep track of that lifetime value, as well as the cost of acquisition for yourself, as well as referrals that come out of that relationship. And it's still the number one way to grow your audience that isn't waiting on sweat equity from organic. Paid media is still essential for increasing your revenue and getting more traffic. It's a critical component. And even though search stuff is changing with AI, it's not going away in the foreseeable future or the enactable future. We need to kind of stay on it and be aware of it.
Yeah.
Now, that said, I'd love to debunk some myths with you right now. Do you think it's true or false? Paid ads make consumers want to buy immediately.
I would say false. Consumers are, by and large, very, very smart. They know when they're being sold to. It's canny how smart we've become. That being said, on certain brands, I'm sure there's impulse buying that somebody else might be like, oh, no. But I have a use case scenario where that is absolutely true. Yeah, okay, we're probably dealing with some kind of impulse buying. It's going to be a small part of the overall pie.
Amazing. I agree. And I think most online purchases over $100 are considered purchases. And that's because it's not an impulse. It's like, no, I don't know if I want to spend $100 on it, which is funny because you go out for dinner and you drop $100. But in your mind, you have other emotional things of, do I want to drop this online? So we all have to remember that they may be able to afford it, but even though they can afford it, doesn't mean they're buying it in this day and age. So paid ads do not necessarily make consumers want to buy immediately. All right, myth number two, everybody will want to get in contact with you in the same way, especially once they see your paid ad. True or false, Lika?
False. And it's been so debunked. And I think that's what business owners are struggling with the most, is that we want to interact with brands on our own terms, and that is spread throughout a gamut of tools and platforms and channels, and it's becoming increasingly harder for business owners to be in all the spots where they need to be. I don't think in this day and age that you can do that without some kind of automation platform.
Absolutely. There's just no way to scale with all of these communication channels. You know, I took out a support ticket yesterday with Asana and I didn't hear back with them, which was below my standard. I would have expected to hear with them within 12 hours. Vidyard, I took out a support ticket with them this morning and they already resolved the issue by lunchtime for me. So I was surprised. So I actually went onto Twitter and pinged Asana because they've responded to me on there much faster in the past. And I was like, what's up? Like, what's with the SLA on your support policy now? I am an executive customer of yours. You laugh, but you know this is how what people's expectation is right now of like, how quickly are you getting back to your support tickets, particularly if you are a platform and that is your core service and people are counting on you to run your business.
Yep.
All right. So staying on top of that and keeping up, your soundbite is that you need an automation platform and you need a way to filter them all into one spot. Something like HubSpot is still what we would recommend. Do you agree with that?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Because you can have those inbox channels too, which gather all of your different channels to one spot. So a customer service agent can actually get back to people across multiple different platforms of phone calls, emails, live chat, etc.
So in all fairness, other platforms can do that as well. However, HubSpot has an open API. So even if there's something that doesn't quite fit, chances are that you'll be able to fit it and create something for it. It's so much more cost effective than some of the other tools. We're a little bit biased towards HubSpot.
Well, and also I always tell people that what you're paying for in HubSpot is that monthly support. So going back to my example of support, you can live chat, you can phone call, you can email. There's three different ways. A lot of what you're paying for in HubSpot is that ability to get an answer very quickly.
Yeah.
Myth number three, if you build it, they will come. Do you think it's important to have paid media just because it's going to automatically work?
I do not believe. So I've been doing this for quite a while, and I remember the days where if you build it, they would come naturally. So my heart is really like, I wish we were still in those days, but we are not. It's more of a war now than ever before. We have to fight so hard for eyeballs, for interactions. You can't rely on just one thing.
It's funny to think about the age of the internet and early days of paid media as having worked in that sort of, if you build it, they will come. And people still remember those amazing stories of, I just bought a .com email and all of a sudden I'm worth millions, right? Like we still have that sort of picture that business hasn't worked like that in 20 years, but we still have this sort of memory of it. And I don't know that AI is going to be like, you can't get out in front with AI right now and be like, oh, if I build it, they will come. We're not there yet. I don't think either, or am I missing something?
No, because I think AI to a certain degree is pretty stupid, and I hate to say it like that, but you still need to have the human touch, the human element. And if I were to predict you know, the future is that the human element is going to become more and more critical. Our ability to recognize bad data, our ability to look at a, you know, content and be like, hey, something's not quite right, or it just doesn't feel right, or I think that's going to become critical. Our soft skills, our, you know, our empaths are going to, you know, I always joke with the introverted empaths. I think their time is a coming.
Well, it's sort of the, that what you were just describing was this ability to perceive something else is going on. So, you know, that ability to have perception of I feels right, or I don't think that's right, or that sort of industry, and I know my company, I know my business, I know my competitors, all of that ability to perceive so many things at once. While AI has the capacity to do it, it's still going to need someone to program it how to do it, because we're just at that basic early entry point of AI. We're not at generative AI where it's at, you know, the same metacognition level as a human, and we are far away from your Terminator level where it's super AI. So just to remind everybody, yes, it's coming, and yes, the machine learning will speed it up, and exciting things are happening, and more has happened in the last year than AI has ever happened, for sure.
Yeah.
I still think we have to remember that in the short term, in the near future, humans are very much required, and if not more than ever, to sort through the junk of data and bad experiences.
Not to date myself, but I remember in high school, you know, we were taught math, arithmetic, you had to learn your times table. And at one point I reached my algebra class and I got to use a scientific calculator, and it was like, oh yeah, like I finally get to use a scientific calculator. To me, AI is the scientific calculator. It's not going to solve the math problem for you. You still have to do the work. It just makes things a little bit quicker.
Amazing. I think we were obviously born of the same generation, because I remember it was as exciting as like getting your keys and walking around in hallways, swinging your keys around. You were like, I get the scientific calculator. I've made it. Lika, it was so great to have you on the show. Thanks for giving of your time again to share your expertise.
No problem. Let's do it again.
Yay.
So you're standing on the great precipice of this change you're going to make, which is you're going to jump into the foray of actually doing paid media for the first time. And you've been thrown all of these questions of things that could go wrong, and the money that you could spend, and the software, and the people, and the types of campaigns, and where you're going to host them, and the budget that's required, and the fact that some are more expensive than others. Phew, it's a lot to consider, but there are resources and people who can help. Listening to this podcast is a great start. You might have someone in your network who can give advice, or you can approach an expert like the consultants at our company, Tangible Words, or Lika's company, Mind and Metrics. We'll help you for free to figure out if throwing money at paid media is a good move for your company. After doing that research, if you still want to dive in, here are the essential requirements for getting started. First, set a budget. I think paid media is often a really great way to lose a lot of money quickly. So when I say set a budget, I think you really need to think about what's your cap on spend going to be, that this is still going to be worth it to you. And there's lots of tools out there that will help you figure this out. And there's lots of companies that will do this with you, where you can say, okay, how much in the case of pay-per-click, how much am I going to be paying for each click? You can research that, right? You can look at the cost of the pay-per-click. We use SEMrush, but you can use that those tools to be like, what is the value of that key term? And we actually usually do a thing called sprint testing, which comes from the Mint CRO methodology, which I think they're doing great work about how do you do a low-cost test on something like Facebook to get a benchmark of what is the message that resonates with people, but that costs me the least amount of money. And Facebook's a great place to test that. So if you want to talk more about how we do that, we're happy to show you for free how we do that. But that's a great way to start with a budget, to be like, okay, well, now we know the phrase that resonates from the sprint test we just did on Facebook. Now we can actually take those search terms and be like, how much do they cost on a cost per click value? And what you're looking for in that sprint test is what Mint CRO calls those gold coin messages that are high click in your demographic on the test that you did. They're high click on the actual message, and the phrase costs less than 50 cents. So you're already kind of ahead. But you can set up a budget on each of the social platforms and pay-per-click platforms that you're going to be using to see how much that search term is going to cost you. So you can do all of that without spending money on the paid media. Second, get a tool like HubSpot that will allow you to set up tracking on your ads and build the infrastructure for conversions on those ads so that you can actually get proper lead generation, not just traffic. You don't want to just be paying for clicks when you don't know who those people end up becoming and you can't nurture them to become customers. Third, strategize. Test your content on your free traffic generators so that you know what messages work with your audience and are most likely to convert. Then see what versions of those messages are the cheapest. You don't want to be competing against people who may have bigger budgets for paid media than you do. If you're competing against people who have bigger budgets for paid media than you do, then it's a losing game for you. Every dollar that you spend is just a drop in the bucket to them, and overall their spend will overpower what you can so that you get lost in the shuffle. You really want to look for good opportunity keywords for your audiences that aren't so competitive. And the fourth thing you need before you get started is you want to make sure that you have the process for your team to actually organize and follow up with these people. So for example, what if nobody responds to this lead in a timely manner? And we know leads decay after the first 5 minutes exponentially over time. That's pretty quick, right? So you need to make sure that your team is going to be able to respond to these leads. You want to customize your chat options to be right there to answer the questions. I think that's a really good strategy to make sure you have that set up and to understand quickly where leads are in their buyer's journey. Are they just starting out? Are they actually ready to make a decision? Because you don't want to miss out on speaking to them where they are at that moment in time and giving them the appropriate resources to better guide them towards a purchase when they're ready. I think lead nurturing after the form fill is also an infrastructure you can build before you get started with paid media because you want to make sure that you have that infrastructure set up. And finally, meeting links are an amazing thing to have ready to go. You can do it on the free version of HubSpot, but you can set up those meeting links so that when they are ready to chat, they can get to you quickly.
Find more episodes of the Company Growth Podcast on YouTube or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you've got a company growth story you'd like to share, reach out to Tangible Words. We'd love to hear your story and use it to inspire others to beat their own company growing pains. Until next time, thank you for listening to the Company Growth Podcast.